Hi there. Welcome to another edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. Hoping you're having a great day so far, whenever and wherever you may be listening. I'm your humble host, or sometimes humble host, for this mostly hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. For this Wednesday, the third day of June, 2020. How you doing? You doing all right? I hope things are good for you. Hope you are well. Hope you and yours are safe. That's still weird to say that, but I do hope that you and yours are safe. Because, honestly, today in America, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you are not safe. And that, my friends, is a very, very sad thing to behold. A very sad thing. We're watching things unfold across America as anarchists and members of fascist organizations are destroying our nation or attempting to destroy our nation. They're stealing, they're destroying, they're killing people. And it's a shocking time to be alive in the United States of America when we see the same tactics which have played out in other nations happening here. In an effort to persuade gullible people that our form of government is wrong and that it is unfair and that there needs to be a systemic change taking place. When in truth, everything that is unfair, that is unjust, that is wrong with our system as it is, has been caused by the very people in politics who support the efforts that are ongoing right now. I have to refrain myself. I try to keep this more or less a family podcast, even though it's not really family oriented. I try to respect your sensibilities and not use certain language, but as Will Smith would say, damn, because this kind of insanity just keeps going on and it keeps repeating itself. And what happens? Cops kneel. Politicians kneel. People put up black blocks on their social media profiles. People are trying to stand in unity with something that quite honestly should not be stood with, but should be destroyed. Because all lives matter. And the way our system is designed, all lives can thrive. But those who are looking for political advantage keep people at a disadvantage while promising them the moon, knowing they can't deliver. And as a result, those people, after a while, get bent out of shape. And when something goes wrong, those who are activists trying to make change will take advantage of that wrongdoing and start destroying things, which is what's happening in America today. It's a sad thing, a very sad thing. Let's see, personal business, taking care of business yesterday. All things went well. My session went well. It was great. By the way, it was a webinar. And if I'd known all of the details, I don't know if I could have publicized it because it was targeted towards a specific group of people. But the YouTube video will be online very shortly. And if it's not already, I'll do some checking this morning. And if the YouTube video for that webinar is available, then I'll post the link to it on my social media, on the Daily Perspective Podcast, Facebook and Twitter social media. And I encourage you to listen to it because it is the perspective of, it was an interview, so to speak, with a black man about the church's role in what's happening with race relations in America today. And it was a very interesting and revealing time together. And this is not just a guy who was raised here in America. This is a guy from Zimbabwe who is in the process of becoming an American citizen. So this is a black man from another country in Africa becoming an American citizen, looking through his eyes at what's happening in America today. It's very interesting. And as I said, I'll put that link up. But that happened yesterday. If you were concerned about my mom, she's fine. She went to see an eye doctor. She's got an infection. She said that she thinks it came from the other day when she got an eyelash in her eye. She has trouble had trouble getting it out. And she may have scratched her eye in the process of trying to get this. You know how sometimes you get an eyelash stuck behind your eyelid and it drives you insane? And that's what was happening to her. And in the process of getting it out, she might have scratched her eye. And then an infection set in. And as a result, it was bright lights were very painful. She was having trouble seeing. And so she went to see an eye doctor. They told her what was going on, wrote her some prescriptions. And we got that all sorted out. I took her by to pick up her prescriptions yesterday afternoon. And all is well. So good for mom. Yay. And she said, if you want to know what I'll be doing for the next few days, I'll be sitting in the house putting drops in my eyes. So bless her heart. That's her next few days. Oh, and you remember I told you about her catching the raccoon, my adventures with mom and the raccoon. I think that was last week, maybe a week before. And the day after that, she caught a possum. And the reason she had the trap out, she had this big have a heart trap out. It's not big. It's big enough for a small animal about the size of a possum or a raccoon or, you know, the family cat or something like that. The reason she had that trap out was because a neighbor's cat was loose and the neighbor's been trying to get the cat and the cat is not coming home. And she'd been putting this trap out there with food in it, hoping to trap the cat so that she could get it back to her neighbor. And finally, she trapped the cat. She said she thawed out some little pieces of tilapia from the freezer and stuck them out there, and that's what did it. The squirrels didn't want it. The raccoons didn't want it, and the possums didn't want it. But that cat really wanted that tilapia. So now the stray cat is safely at home, and the trap has been put away. And hopefully we'll have no more wildlife adventures with mom. Oh, my. But all is well, as far as I can see, in our neighborhood. The personal project I've been working on, the stand for the washer and the dryer, that's coming along. I've got to go get another piece of trim today because I messed something up, and now I don't have enough trim to fix what I messed up. So I got to go spend another $20 on an 8-foot section of trim to make sure the front of it looks just like I want it. And then once that's done, once that's cut and glued and nailed into place, then I can sand it all down, smooth off the rough edges, and start painting, and we'll be done. And this, it will be done and ready to set up well before the part to fix the washer comes in. Domestic bliss for me. Let's get to the news, shall we? And as I like to, from time to time, I like to start with an absurd item of the day. I think I'm going to reserve that for after the break, because it has to do with looting. It has to do with the rioting and all of the stuff that's going on. And it's a completely, totally, incredibly absurd take on what's happening. I'll save that for after the break. First up, let's go to something that I shared yesterday on social media. But I want to bring you the audio this morning because I know not all of you follow what I post online. You just listen to the podcast. So this is Larry Elder. He has a radio show in California. He's been on for a long, long time there. He's a brilliant, brilliant man. He was being interviewed about systemic racism. And this is how that went.
Tell me what you think the most systemic racist issue is. What is it?
Well, I would say that because black people in many cases, were descendants of slaves, that racism as an institution, that it just, a certain amount of it just exists.
2015? Give me the most blatant racist example you can come up with right now.
I think you could probably find evidence that in general, cops are more willing to shoot if the perpetrator is black.
What's your data?
Than white.
What's your basis for saying that? Last year.
Well, look, I know a lot of people would say, look what's going on in Chicago.
I know what they would say. Yeah. I'm talking about what the facts are. 965 people were shot by cops last year and killed. 4% of them were white cops shooting unarmed blacks. In Chicago in 2011, 21 people were shot and killed by cops. In 2015, there were 7. In Chicago, which is a third black, a third white, and a third Hispanic, 70% of the homicides are black on black. About 40 per month, almost 500 in the year. per year last year in Chicago, and 75% of them are unsolved. Where is the Black Lives Matter on that? The idea that a racist white cop shooting unarmed black people is a peril to black people is BS. It's complete and total BS. And the reason for these so-called activists saying this is the assumption that racism remains a major problem in America. The media, CNN, especially MSNBC, runs down whenever a black cop shoots somebody, and it's some march on Washington. It's ridiculous. Black people, half the homicides in this country are committed by and against black people. Last year, there were 14,000 homicides, not talking about suicides, I'm talking about homicides. Mm-hmm. Half of them were black, 96% of them black on black of that 7,000. Where's a Black Lives Matter people on that?
So that there's where you would say that this is purely because of social justice. This is purely because they want ultimately for people to be angry enough to just keep voting Democrat.
That's right. And where's the evidence of a lack of social justice? When a black suspect is killed by a cop, believe me, the media's on it. People are watching it, and justice will for the most part occur. In Baltimore, where Freddie Gray was killed. Freddie Gray died in a van. I shouldn't say was killed. Died in a van.
Yeah.
You have a city that's 45% black. City council is 100% Democrat. The majority of city council is black. The top cop at the time was black. The number two cop was black. The majority of the command staff is black. The mayor is black. The AG is black. And yet here we are talking about racism. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah.
It's absurd.
So it's funny. I find myself caught in between this a little bit as a liberal where I want to always try to defend the other. So in this case, the other being black people, I'm always sympathetic to that. And that, yeah. At the same time, I hear you laying out a pretty solid case.
Well, these are just the facts. I'll tell you something else, too. There was just a study, University of Washington. And it turns out cops were more reluctant, more hesitant to pull the trigger against a black suspect than a white suspect. Probably because of the fear of being accused of racially profiling and the fear that the civil rights establishment was going to come down on him. So if anything, whites are more likely to be shot by a cop under certain circumstances than a black person. And in the last 30 or 40 years, the percentage of suspects killed by cops who are black has declined 75%. However, the percentage of whites killed by cops has flatlined.
Yeah.
And so if anything, people are more concerned about shooting black people for fear that they're going to be called racist. And almost every one of these incidents, whether it's Eric Garner in New York, who died because he was selling Lucy's and resisted arrest, whether it's Tamir Rice in Cleveland, who was twirling around the gun, whether it's Michael Brown in Ferguson, who had just committed an strong-arm robbery, almost every one of these incidents involved somebody resisting arrest. Why don't you just do what the police tell you? My dad said, when I get pulled over, have my hand at 10 o'clock, have my hand at 2 o'clock, say yes, sir, say no, sir, make sure my paperwork is in order, and if I feel the cop is mistreating me, get a badge number and deal with it later on. If Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Obama and the whole group of them told black people to do that, we'd have a lot fewer of these things to deal with in the first place.
Yeah. All right. So I'm with you. I'm hearing a lot of what you're saying here. So as a black conservative, then, who now you've laid out your case there.
But you haven't laid out yours. I asked you to name the most important example of racism, and you gave white cops going after black people. And I told you, gave you the facts for that. So that's nonsense. So you must have something else. What else is it? If you think racism remains a problem in America, give it to me.
Well, I think it remains a problem. It may not be systemic in that it's not like you're not being hired because you're black. There's no systemic reason, legal reason that exists, that kind of thing. But I think that racism as a general
exists. I need some specifics. You gave me the white cop thing. What else? Give me another example where you think is a problem.
Well, as a black conservative, tell me, how do you get people to come around?
You're the one who made the assertion that you think racism remains a major problem in America. I asked you to give me an example. You gave me white cops going after blacks. As far as I'm concerned, you didn't hold it up very well. What's the other argument you have? What's the other thing?
Well, I don't know that it's systemic in the sort of macro sense.
I'm not mad. I just want to know what it is you're talking about.
Believe me, that's 100% what I wanted to have you.
Blacks are not getting into school. BS. We have affirmative action. So a black person with an SAT and a GPA of X will get into a school faster and easier than a white person with an SAT or a GPA of X. And if going to school is a route to the middle class, you can make an argument that blacks have an easier route to the middle class. If you're talking about blacks, about poverty, the poorer you are, the more accessible loans and grants are for you. The problem, the biggest burden that black people have, in my opinion, again, is the percentage of blacks, 75% of them, that are raised without fathers. And that has every other social negative consequence connected to it. Crime, not being able to compete economically in the country, being more likely to be arrested, that's the number one problem facing the black community. And when I hear people tell me about systemic racism or unconscious racism, I always say, give me an example, and almost nobody can do it.
Larry Elder, who was being interviewed by Dave Rubin, and then he turned the table and put Dave Rubin on the spot. And as you heard, Dave Rubin couldn't support his assumptions of racism in America. More after the break, when The Daily Perspective continues. Back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Wednesday. Wow, where's the week going? Wednesday, the third day of June 2020. And we're talking about all things unrest, I guess. It's a sad day in America. It really is. But it's also a day that should make right-thinking people angry. Because we're watching subversive groups take advantage of the emotional toll on a segment of our society, which has been caused by subversive groups. And then there are the politicians who play along with the subversive groups because they know that if the subversive groups get what they want, then these particular politicians will get more power and control. And that's sick and twisted, but that's progressive politics. And a shining symbol of the blithering idiots who are attached to progressive politics is the one, the only, Maxine Waters. Yep.
Ludicrous speed! Go!
Maxine Waters has never been shy about spinning riots. She was doing it back in 1992 as a Democratic newcomer to Congress when Los Angeles exploded in the Rodney King chaos, and Waters praised the days of senseless destruction. She fomented potential violence herself just a couple of years ago in 2018 with a speech to her Los Angeles supporters, urging all liberals to publicly harass Trump administration officials they spotted going about in the business of living. Now, amid the unrest over George Floyd's death in Minneapolis last week, Waters has already done her part to pour gasoline on the fires of upheaval sweeping the nation. In an appearance Sunday on MSNBC, Waters began a defense of criminals on an enormous scale by implying the massive theft being committed by looters nationwide during the spasm of mayhem seizing the country shouldn't really be considered looting at all. Quote, "Young people, they have a whole new definition for looting. They say looting is predatory lending in, you know, minority neighborhoods, where they're paying 300 and 400% on loans by these payday lenders. You know, on and on and on. They have a different definition for it." So according to Waters, shattered storefronts of small businesses, pillaged drug stores, liquor stores, and sneaker shops, with uncounted millions in goods being stolen while powerless authorities stand by, aren't evidence of looting to the people who are doing it. The real looting is by businesses that lend money in minority neighborhoods, basically extending credit to men and women who can't get it anywhere else. That's what she seems to be arguing. The fact is, one has nothing to do with the other. And Waters, she might even know that. But as an argument for downplaying the destruction looting is causing the country, including very much the minority communities Democrats pretend to champion, it might be the best they can do. The Waters appearance didn't get a lot of mainstream publicity. It's understandable. The liberal media would shy away from publicizing such a radical viewpoint. But plenty of people on social media noticed it. The response was scorching. Ann Coulter said, "You thought you already knew every single reason why Representative Maxine Waters was dumb as a brick But did you have the pleasure of seeing her today on MSNBC talking about today's looting? Oh, wow. Some guy who just goes by the name of Steve says, Maxine is another self-serving demo rat politician who lives in a multi-million dollar mansion outside of her district. Her district is a total mess. He's right. Another says, she said the looting is predatory lending. So you can all go to her house. Another says, the enemies of the black community, the MSDNC and Maxine Waters. Well, normal Americans watching the wave of destruction sweeping over the nation's biggest cities, a paroxysm of lawlessness and greed masquerading as a protest over the death of a man in police custody, know good and well that what's been happening is not some sort of disobedience to make a point. It's thievery by thugs, mainly in Democratic-controlled areas where Democratic politicians are literally afraid to protect their own law-abiding citizens from the rabble. But for Democrats like Waters, the recent riots are a reason to go on TV, to friendly outlets like MSNBC, and spin a fantasy that what's taking place is some kind of cry from the underclass, frustrated at the availability of payday loans. A normal person might think that was insane enough, but a normal person might then remember that Waters is the chairwoman of the House Financial Services Committee. Maxine Waters has spent literally her entire career in Congress proving who she is, from the Rodney King days to her incessant calls to impeach President Donald Trump. Yet the Democratic House Majority and House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, have seen fit to put such a demagogue in charge of the House committee that oversees the American financial system. That is beyond crazy. And it's one more thing Republicans and conservatives need to remember when it comes to the vote in November. Now, going back a little bit, she's talking about people paying 300 to 400% on loans by payday lenders. If you've been a longtime listener and you listen to the Mark and Max show in more recent years, you've heard Dave and me talking about one of the job opportunities that Dave had. Somebody came to him and said, "Hey, you want to go in on a payday loan place? It's where you can go in and write them a check and they will cash it out for you as a loan." And you pay them back on payday. And the percentage rate, the interest rate on the loan is just confiscatory. It's just insane how expensive it is to do that. And the person who was encouraging Dave to get involved in it said, "Hey, all you got to do is get X amount of money out on the street and you're set. It's a gold mine. It just keeps making money for you." And on one hand, he's thinking, wow, that's good money. On the other hand, that's just dirty. I can't do that to people. That's just wrong. And that kind of sums up the way I look at payday loans. I actually have a friend who, this was years ago, who went, he was constantly struggling, constantly trying to stay afloat. This guy was constantly broke. And bless his heart, he couldn't figure out why he was constantly broke. It was because he spent more than he had, and he wouldn't focus on what it took to actually build a decent financial foundation for himself. And so he never had money in the bank to fall back on. He never had, I mean, he was literally living from paycheck to paycheck, almost. And he was always fretting about the power being off or this happening or not being able to buy gas for his car to get to work and things. It was a constant thing because, among other things, he insisted on working instead of learning a trade, really learning something that could have made him money. He insisted on working all these little part-time jobs that were fun but didn't make him any money. And he, not once, I think he did it twice, he actually used a payday loan processor. And he cashed a check, and the interest rate ate him alive. It was worse than before. because now he owed even more money than he had. And he swore it off, said he learned his lesson. A couple of years later, he did it again. Now, this same person is a rabid leftist who is all about hating the bad orange man and standing with organizations like Black Lives Matter and Antifa and these other radical leftist subversive groups that are really, they really are fascist organizations. And I actually, both of the names I just mentioned, I think they are both terrorist organizations, domestic terrorist organizations. But he supports things like that because life is unfair and people can't get a good deal and they can't get a break and they can't get a loan and they can't, they're oppressed. These people are all oppressed because the man's against them, the system's stacked against them, everything's stacked against them. No, not necessarily. If you ignore how life works and then blame life for eating your lunch, it's a lot like ignoring, I don't know, the fact that a crocodile will kill you and going up to the edge of the water so you can pet the crocodile. And then when it kills you, you scream and yell and you blame everything in the world but your own stupidity for your injuries. That's what happens when your brain succumbs to progressivism. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. It is Wednesday, the third day of June 2020. And life is weird. That's all I can say. I can say Maxine Waters is an idiot, but she keeps getting voted in by people in a district that is essentially war-torn. And it is just it's in really, really, really bad shape. And she lives in a really expensive house, not in that area. And they keep voting her back into office because she keeps promising that she's their hero and that she's going to fight for them and that all these white people who are oppressing them are going to answer to her someday. And that's absolutely ridiculous. Because the reason these people have life so bad in her district, which she could help, is because she's not actually their hero. She's just lying to them for political power. And she'll never stop. And sadly, unless they learn a lesson from what's happening right now, they'll never stop voting for her. But what's happening right now is destroying their neighborhoods. It's destroying the businesses that support them. It's where their moms and grandmas and those elderly people go to buy groceries. It's the drugstores where they get their prescriptions. It's the businesses which are supporting the community, which are owned by people in the community, operated by people in the community, and they're destroying all of that. And no, you cannot equate that to payday loans. You can't. Wisdom says don't do the payday loan. Desperation says do it. It's your only choice. You never live in desperation. Choose another path. There's always another option. Well, away. By the way, this is I got an article here from PJ Media by Brian Preston. And it's called Rioters Murdered These Two Black Men. And when Maxine Waters says that these people who are protesting have a right to do so and what they're doing is right and you can't misinterpret what they're doing, she is intentionally ignoring the fact that there is an element that's taking advantage of the unrest, fanning the flames of the unrest, and those people don't care at all about the lives of these people. They don't. What they care about is fundamental change, is transforming fundamentally the United States of America.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That's what these people care about. Away from all the noise and instigation in the media, ask yourself one simple question. Who are the rioters really terrorizing? The answer is obvious. The rioters are mostly terrorizing people of color in communities where they are the majority. Prove this wrong. Change my mind, as the meme says. No one can, because it's a stone-cold fact. The rioters are terrorists, disproportionately harming and terrorizing people of color. How is this helping George Floyd or honoring his memory? It's not. How will this bring about beneficial change? It won't. How is calling all police racist helping anyone or anything? It isn't. Here's a privileged white liberal egging the rioters on. Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey said, "Riots in American cities have a positive aspect. Quote, yes, America is burning, but that's how forests grow." Uh-huh. She said this during a Zoom call speech to the Boston Area Chamber of Commerce yesterday. This is according to multiple news reports. Now, let's hear from one of the victims, a retired St. Louis City police captain, shot and killed outside of a looted North City pawn shop overnight. There's now a $10,000 reward offered for any information. Around 2:30 a.m. Tuesday morning, police found 77-year-old David Dorn shot dead outside of Lee's Pawn and Jewelry Store in the 4100 block of Martin Luther King Drive. Martin Luther King Drive. They wrote, "He was murdered by looters at a pawn shop. He was the type of brother that would have given his life to save them if he had to. Violence is not the answer, whether it's a citizen or officer." Here's another black victim of liberal riot cheerleading, a federal law enforcement officer who was shot and killed while providing security at the U.S. courthouse in Oakland, California, during a protest, was identified Sunday. 53-year-old David Patrick Underwood died from gunshot wounds sustained after someone fired shots from an unidentified vehicle Friday night, according to the FBI. Both men were black. Both men were career law enforcement officers. Both men are dead. Because there is a moral vacuum, a complete and utter lack of sense and humanity, of virtue, of morality, among leaders on the left who could and should speak out and end this. I would say they should do more than speak out. They should do what the president has urged them to do by activating the National Guard in large measures. But I digress. As BuzzFeed reported a couple of days ago, black protesters do not want any of this. They don't want Antifa or its cheerleaders around. In a video that's been shared online widely, Anderson, who's black, is seen confronting a white man with a cloth covering his face. And after the man spray paints ACAB, which stands for All Cops Are Bastards, on public property. Anderson said he was doing a news interview when he saw the man vandalizing, so he turned around and tried to stop him. Quote, "I said, we ask allies to step back so that we can make sure that you're following what we're asking you to do," he recalled. And he was like, "I'm not your ally. You guys want to protect the status quo. I don't need you. I don't need to be here for you all." By the way, ACAB is a term originated by the skinheads. He's not alone. Peaceful black protesters have been pleading with white Antifa radicals to stop vandalizing and instigating. The Antifa radicals aren't listening. The immoral Massachusetts Attorney General lives behind security every second she chooses to. The riots won't get to her. She's fine if the country burns. So she thinks. Roth Pierre, Robespierre thought he was fine too. This is how forests grow. Let that sink in. This is the Attorney General for the state of Massachusetts. Yes, America is burning, but that's how forests grow. This Attorney General is a progressive politician. And that particular turn of phrase, that terminology tells you everything you need to know about their mentality. And that is that they are willing to burn this country down to rebuild it as a fundamentally different place.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
What's happening right now is the result of seeds planted then. We've seen unrest like this before. It's been going on in our country since the 60s. There were all kinds of things happening even back then. And those 60s radicals are now tenured professors at colleges across America. They're senior members of Congress and the House and the Senate. They're in political positions across the country because they all realized instead of carrying signs and cursing at cops, they could actually make the change by getting involved politically and in the education system. And as a result, we have a generation of people who have been raised in a country built on the abolition of slavery. Even though some owned slaves when it first started, it was a common thing back then. The Republican Party was founded to abolish slavery. We fought hard to make it happen. It took time. Things like this take time. When you're making a change in something that's been just accepted as part of life, it takes time to convince enough people to make things change. And this country, which was one of them that led the way, not built on roots or seeds of racism. It happened or slavery, because it happened to be common at the time. There are many things which we today don't accept as being commonplace, which were just a generation ago. I'm old enough to remember ads for smoking endorsed by doctors. Now, if you're not old enough to remember that, let me encourage you to go look that up today. Imagine your doctor smoking during an exam. Imagine that. It wasn't that long ago. It was common and accepted. Things change. It takes a little time to make things change when things are heavily ingrained into a society. And worldwide, those things were. But these people in education and in politics are lying to us about our past. They're lying to a generation of people about this country. And they're proposing changes which have been proven disastrous every time they've been tried everywhere else. And so, now they're taking advantage of emotional unrest in the country. And they're hoping to derail a presidency and to turn the course of a nation. And they're standing on the body of an unjustly killed man and ignoring his family's wishes in the process.
Welcome.
back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along here. I looked over a few moments ago during the break just to check progress, to look over at the Facebook side of things, and realized I never clicked the go live button. I don't know. There are a handful of things I can blame it on. One of them is I'm a little foggy today because there's something in the air that's making my sinuses go crazy. And for the last, I don't know, the last week or so, everything's been a fog. But anyway, my apologies. To those of you listening to the podcast, congratulations, you got it today. The Facebook Live listeners didn't. Tomorrow I'll have to apologize to the Facebook Live crowd. Oh my gosh. And during the break also, I'm skimming social media. I usually do that during the breaks, and that is because I have my social media account set up to monitor the publishing of a lot of places that I get information from. And this turned up, and I want to, I'm halting here because I'm trying to, there we go. I'm trying to to copy and paste some things and make sure I get everything lined up for show notes, because I don't want to drop the ball on the show notes too. Maybe I should have had the dog do the show today. You know, there's an idea. But there's a story coming from Daily Wire by Ryan Saavedra. It's called, that talks about the stats, the science about systemic police racism. And we talked about this listening to the Larry Elder clip at the beginning of the podcast today. And I think this is probably a good way to end the podcast by sort of bookending things and going back to that particular subject. Because one of the things we're being told, the reason for all of this going on right now, is systemic police racism. We're being told it's a huge problem. It's a real problem. It's a dynamic problem. And a lot of people are suffering because of racist cops. An op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal by Heather McDonald. By the way, I need to say, before I dive into this, we're dealing with research, statistics, and basically science here. These are studies. We're talking about studies of the reality of the situation, not opinion. Here we go. An op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal by Heather McDonald, Thomas W. Smith Fellow at the Manhattan Institute, pushed back on the notion that there is widespread systemic racism in American law enforcement. Violent riots have broken out in major cities across the country over the death of George Floyd last week, resulting in police officers being attacked and killed, businesses destroyed, and widespread arson and looting. McDonald notes that while Floyd's ultimately fatal arrest was horrifying, video shows that a police officer knelt on the 46-year-old's neck for over 8 minutes while Floyd said he could not breathe, it is not representative of the 375 million annual contacts that police officers have with civilians. A solid body of evidence finds no structural bias in the criminal justice system with regard to arrests, prosecution, or sentencing, McDonald writes. Rather, crime and suspect behavior, not race, determine most police actions. McDonald writes, in 2019, police officers fatally shot 1,004 people, most of whom were armed or otherwise dangerous. African Americans were about a quarter of those killed by cops last year, 235, a ratio that has remained stable since 2015. That share of black victims is less than what the black crime rate would predict, since police shootings are a function of how often officers encounter armed and violent suspects. In 2018, the latest year for which such data has been published, African Americans made up 53% of known homicide offenders in the United States and commit about 60% of robberies, though they are 13% of the population. Police fatally shot 9 unarmed blacks and 19 unarmed whites in 2019, according to a Washington Post database. down from 38 and 32, respectively, in 2015. Now, that is the stat that Larry Elder was quoting earlier in the podcast. And this is also coming from a Washington Post database. The Washington Post is not a friend to conservatives or conservatism. The Post defines unarmed broadly to include such cases as a suspect in Newark, New Jersey, who had a loaded shotgun in his car during a police chase. In 2018, there were 7,407 black homicide victims. Assuming a comparable number of victims last year, those 9 unarmed black victims of police shootings represent 0.1% of all African Americans killed in 2019. 0.1%. By contrast, a police officer is 18.5 times more likely to be killed by a black male than an unarmed black male is to be killed by a police officer. McDonald further highlights violence that was committed against blacks over the weekend in Chicago, and notes that the reason that blacks die from homicide at a rate 8 times higher than whites and Latinos is combined, is not because of the police, but because of crime. McDonald also highlights studies by both the Justice Department under President Obama and the finding of an African-American Harvard economist. A 2015 Justice Department analysis of the Philadelphia Police Department found that white police officers were less likely than black or Hispanic officers to shoot unarmed black suspects. Research by Harvard economist Roland G. Fryer Jr. also found no evidence of racial discrimination in shootings. Any evidence to the contrary fails to take into account crime rates and civilian behavior before and during interactions with police. Researchers in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found similar results. Quote, we find no evidence of anti-black or anti-Hispanic disparities across shootings, and white officers are not more likely to shoot minority civilians than non-white officers, the report found. Instead, quoting again, race-specific crime strongly predicts civilian race. This suggests that increasing diversity among officers by itself is unlikely to reduce racial disparity in police shootings. There's also a similar case being that is presented in a PragerU video that's linked in this particular article, and I encourage you to get show notes today and watch the PragerU video as well. Now, a couple of times in this article, a term is used that I think is key, and that is behavior. Civilian behavior. Remember what Larry Elder said. He said, my dad taught me, if you're pulled over by the cops, put your hands on the steering wheel at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. Make sure you have your paperwork in order, you know, your driver's license, registration, and the things like that, that you're supposed to have as a legal driver. And do what they tell you to do. And if you feel like you're being treated unfairly, take note of the officer's badge number and deal with it later, not at that time. There is a time and place for everything, and your behavior determines what happens to you. That's the lesson we have to learn from what Larry Elder's dad said. And I've seen many black guys say they've told their kids the same thing and that their dads told them the same thing. You should put your hands at 10 and 2. I do the same thing. If I am pulled over, I've gotten a handful of speeding tickets in my life. I like to drive fast. I sometimes get pulled over. When the cop comes to my window, I roll down the window. I make sure my hands are where he can see them on the steering wheel. I generally, if it's a guy, I will address him as sir or officer. If it's a woman, I will say ma'am or officer. And another thing, because I am a concealed carry permit holder, I will also tell them right up front, as soon as they step up to the window and ask for my license and et cetera, I will tell them, I need you to know that I am a concealed carrier permit. I have a concealed carry permit, and I have a firearm on my person at the moment. And generally, what happens Actually, almost always what happens at that particular point is I'm asked, really? Where is that firearm right now? And I'll tell them, it's on my right hip. And usually they'll smile and say, well, let's leave it right there, shall we? I'll be right back. And they go process things, write me the ticket, and I'm on my way. Behavior determines the outcome of a situation. If you start off an encounter with a police officer by screaming and yelling at them, you're making his job harder, and you're making the outcome of your situation a lot less pleasant. That applies regardless of the color of your skin. Regardless of the color of your skin. So the science proves there is not systemic racism in police. And that is where we wrap things up today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the Thursday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.